Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, Brian Lynn has a report on the recent history of efforts to wipe out the disease polio. Mario Ritter Jr. and Jill Robbins have this week's education report. Finally, we hear today's lesson of the day from Jill and Andrew Smith. But first,
polio was driven out of much of the world more than 30 years ago after a series of successful vaccination campaigns. But the viral disease is still spreading in a small number of nations. The recent discovery of the first polio case in Gaza in 25 years led world health officials to set new goals to get rid of the disease in all areas. Polio is an infection caused by a virus that mostly affects children under the age of 5. Most infected people do not have any symptoms, but some can experience a high body temperature, headaches, vomiting, and stiffness of the backbone or spine. The World Health Organization, WHO, says polio can affect the nervous system and cause paralysis within hours. The UN agency estimates 1 in 200 polio cases results in permanent paralysis, usually of the legs. Among children who are paralyzed, up to 10% die when their breathing muscles stop working. The virus spreads from person to person, entering the body through the mouth. It is most often spread through contact with the waste from an infected person. Sometimes it is also passed through water or food. Polio has existed for hundreds of years. The Associated Press says that ancient Egyptian writings show children using sticks to walk and having wasted legs or arms, suggesting the effects of polio. Before the first vaccine was developed in the 1950s, polio was among the world's most feared diseases. A 1916 outbreak in New York killed more than 2,000 people. The worst recorded U.S. outbreak in 1952 killed more than 3,000 people. Many who survived polio suffered lifelong effects, including paralysis and deformed limbs. Others whose breathing muscles were paralyzed required specialized lung treatments. The WHO passed a resolution in 1988 calling for polio to be eradicated or destroyed worldwide. The effort followed a successful campaign against smallpox 8 years earlier. The WHO's first plan was to eradicate polio by 2000. The UN agency cooperated with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, UNICEF, and Rotary International. The campaign centered on increasing the production of a vaccine and launching vaccination efforts. As a result, polio cases dropped by more than 99%. Afghanistan and Pakistan are the only countries where the spread of polio has never been stopped. There have also been outbreaks in several other countries, mostly in Africa. The WHO and its partners now aim to eradicate polio by 2026. Health experts say stopping polio outbreaks requires vaccinating at least 95% of the world's population. Vaccinating people is more difficult in nations that have conflicts or weak health systems. The vaccine given by mouth does not cost a lot to manufacture and is better at preventing infection. But it contains weakened live polio virus. In rare cases, the vaccine can spread or cause polio in unvaccinated people. In even rarer cases, live virus from the vaccine can mutate into a new form that could start new outbreaks. Health officials have become more successful at reducing the number of cases caused by the natural polio virus. The majority of infections in the world today are related to the vaccine. Scott Barrett is a professor at Columbia University in New York City who has studied polio eradication. He told the AP, "The problem with trying to eradicate polio is that the need for perfection is so great and there are so many weak links." He added that while the technical ability to destroy polio exists, we live in a vastly imperfect world. I'm Brian Lynn.
Florentine Jean-Baptiste missed school so often that he had to repeat his first year at Medford High School near Boston. Jean-Baptiste said, "At school, you do the same thing every day." He was absent 30 days in his first year. Then the principal of the school did something different. She let students play organized sports during lunch, if they attended all their classes. In other words, she offered high school students a play period that is usually part of the school day for young children. "It gave me something to look forward to," said 16-year-old Jean-Baptiste. The following year, he cut his absences in half. School-wide, the share of regularly absent students dropped from 35% in March 2023 to 23% in March 2024. That was one of the biggest reductions among Massachusetts high schools. The Associated Press and Stanford University economist Thomas Dee have studied attendance numbers from 42 states and Washington, D.C. They found that years after the school closings from the COVID-19 pandemic, schools in nearly every state are still struggling with attendance.
About 1 in 4 students in the 2022-23 school year were chronically absent. That means they missed at least 10% of the school year. That number represents about 12 million children in states reporting numbers of absent students. Before the pandemic, only 15% of students missed school that often. After spending as much as a year at home during the pandemic, many children see school as more than they can handle, uninteresting, or socially stressful. Some children and parents are deciding it is no problem to stay home. That makes completing classwork even harder. In all but one state, Arkansas, absence rates remain higher than they were before the pandemic. Still, the problem appears to have passed its highest point. Almost every state saw absenteeism go down, at least a little, during the two full school years ending in 2023. Schools are trying to identify students with attendance problems so they can help. They are also trying to communicate better with parents. Some parents might not know their child is missing a lot of school or its effects on their performance. Experts say schools must get creative to meet their students' needs.
In Oakland, California, chronic absenteeism in public schools sharply rose from 29% before the pandemic to 53% during the 2022-23 school year. Officials asked students what would make them want to come to class. They answered money and a mentor. In spring 2023, the Oakland School District received a grant to pay 45 students $50 weekly to attend school every day. 60% of those in the program improved their attendance. Zaya Vera is the district's head of social-emotional learning. Vera said paying students cannot continue for a long time, but many absent students lacked dependable housing or were helping to support their families. The money is the hook that got them in the door. A caring teacher made a difference for 18-year-old Golden Tuchikin. She completed her studies at Oakland's Skyline High School this spring. Coming back to school after the pandemic, she felt lost and anxious. She later realized those feelings made her feel physically sick. She was absent at least 25 days that year. One Afro-Latina teacher seemed to understand her culturally and made Tuchikin feel she belonged in class. Tuchikin already received good grades. In Massachusetts, Medford High School requires administrators to welcome and talk with students each morning, especially those who miss a lot of class. But playtime at lunch has had the greatest effect on improved attendance, Principal Marta Cabral said. High school students need freedom and a chance to move their bodies, she said. They're here for 7 hours a day. They should have a little fun.
Many of the reasons given for students missing school early in the pandemic are still in place. They include financial difficulty, transportation problems, mild illness, and mental health struggles. For example, a study from the University of Southern California said parents reported that almost one-fourth of chronically absent students had emotional or behavioral problems, compared with just 7% of those with good attendance. At Fresno's Fort Miller Middle School, half of the students were chronically absent. Two reasons kept coming up: dirty clothing and no transportation. The school bought a washer and dryer for families to use. It also provided a vehicle to pick up students who missed the bus. Fresno's chronic absenteeism improved to 35% during the school year ending in 2023. 14-year-old Melinda Gonzalez missed the school bus about once a week, so she called for rides from the school vehicle. "I don't have a car. My parents couldn't drive me to school," Gonzalez said. Getting that ride made a big difference. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Mario
Mario Ritter Jr. is here now to talk more about today's education report. Welcome, Mario.
Thank you, Ashley. It's nice to be talking with you again.
Years after the COVID-19 pandemic affected schools across the U.S., nearly every state is still struggling with school attendance. This brings up one word we heard in the report, absenteeism. Can you explain for our listeners what absenteeism means?
Sure, Ashley. The word absenteeism is usually used when talking about kindergarten through 12th grade in the U.S. It means to miss many days of school. Children do miss school from time to time, but the report notes kids appear to have become more likely to miss school days after the pandemic, and many education officials are concerned. Missing a day of school means missing assignments, activities, and opportunities to learn. Absenteeism can sometimes be used when talking about adults, if they are regularly absent from some activity that they would normally attend.
The report suggests that more children and parents see no problem with staying home as one of the reasons for increased absenteeism. Why do you think that is?
In some of our earlier reports, people noted that there was some confusion about when people should stay home. Concerns about spreading COVID caused many people to stay home if they suspected they were sick. They did not want to hurt others. However, many children might have become more likely to say they were ill and avoid going to class.
Well, thanks to you and Jill for that report, Mario, and thank you for answering my questions today.
Thank you, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Listening to the Learning English Podcast. Welcome to the part of the show where we help you do more with our series, Let's Learn English. The series shows Anna Mateo in her work and life in Washington, D.C.
Today, we're going to start by listening to a few little words and sounds Americans typically use at the beginning of sentences.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Which one should we do first?
How about...
Let's do that! You just said it.
Oh, yeah, I did. And we can hear it in Lesson 8 of the Let's Learn English series. Anna goes to the recording studio in her workplace to apologize to her coworker, Jonathan. See if you can hear Jonathan say that little word,
Hi, Jonathan. Are you busy?
Yes, I'm busy. When the studio light is on, I am recording my evening show.
Right. Sorry about yesterday.
No worries.
May I see the studio?
Maybe another time. Right now, I am busy.
Sure. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
I noticed Jonathan said, after Anna asked him a question.
That's right. We usually say, to show that we are thinking about an answer. We also use it, like Jonathan did, to help us say no in a nice, polite way.
Our listeners can hear this explained again with more examples by using the pronunciation practice video in Lesson 8 of Let's Learn English. Each lesson in Let's Learn English Level 1 has a pronunciation practice video. You can find it on our website below the main video and the speaking practice video.
Let's hear the first part of that practice video.
Hesitation noises. When Americans want more time to think about what they are saying, they often use a hesitation noise, like or Listen to Jonathan when he is talking to Anna. He does not want Anna to see what he is doing in the studio.
May I see the studio?
Maybe another time. Right now, I am busy.
Now you try it. Use to make more time to answer a question.
What is 1,012 and 536?
It's 1,548.
The mathematics problem was a good example of when we typically say, And remember, you can learn more by going to the Learning English website and using the Let's Learn English lessons.
That's right. I'm Jill Robbins, and you're listening to the Learning English Podcast.
Lesson 8 also shows how people answer Anna when she apologizes. Anna says sorry many times.
Sorry about yesterday. I'm sorry. For yesterday. Well, I am sorry.
In fact, Americans often say they are sorry for bothering someone, even when it is for only small mistakes or problems.
And they accept apologies by saying, it's okay, or no problem.
And no worries is also a popular way to accept an apology.
That's right. It is an expression we often think of in connection with Australian speakers of English. You might hear a movie character called Crocodile Dundee say, no worries, mate. We also use no worries in emails to show that we do not want the other person to worry.
Let's hear Anna apologize again, this time to both Jonathan and her coworker, Amelia. Listen for how Jonathan and Amelia answer with no worries and it's okay.
Hi, Jonathan. Are you busy?
Yes, I'm busy. When the studio light is on, I am recording my evening show.
Right. Sorry about yesterday.
No worries.
May I see the studio?
Maybe another time. Right now, I am busy.
Sure. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, Amelia. Are you busy?
I'm a little busy.
I want to say I'm sorry for yesterday.
It's okay, Anna.
Well, I am sorry.
It's okay, Anna. Come by this afternoon.
Okay.
There's another small word at the beginning of sentences that our listeners can learn to use.
Oh? What's that?
You just said it.
Oh, I did. Okay, I admit I said that on purpose because we want our listeners to hear the different tone of voice we use with this little word, oh. But instead of listening to me, let's listen to Anna.
In Lesson 9, Anna wants to check the weather in Washington, D.C. She wants to know if it will be warm or cold. Listen carefully. She says, oh, two times, right at the beginning and near the end.
Oh, hi, everyone. Here in Washington, D.C., The weather changes often. One day is cold and windy, but the next day is warm and sunny. So every day I check the forecast. Hello, phone. What is today's temperature?
Today it is 18 degrees.
18 degrees? That is cold.
18 degrees Celsius.
Oh, Celsius. That is 65 degrees Fahrenheit. That's warm.
Yes, Anna, it is warm.
The first time she says, oh, it's very fast. She says,
oh, hi, everyone.
The oh shows that she is a little surprised because in the video, she is reading a book and then notices that the camera is filming her. The way she says, oh, also gives an informal tone to her speaking.
The second time she says, oh, shows that she was wrong about the temperature. When we notice that we made a mistake or believed something that was not true, we say, oh.
And we can say, oh, in a few different ways to show this. If we are wrong about a small detail that's not too important, we usually say the word quickly and with a lower tone of voice, like, oh, okay, I get it.
And then if the mistake is a little bigger, the sound usually gets longer, like this, oh.
And if we make a really big mistake, we usually make it sound much longer, like this. Oh.
That's right.
You're listening to the Learning English Podcast. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins. Andrew, we have explained how to use oh when we are wrong or make a mistake. But maybe we should explain what we say when we get a big surprise.
That's a good idea. Here's an example. Jill, what would you say if I told you that I got married this past weekend?
You got married? Oh my gosh!
Okay, I have to be honest. I did not get married. But you gave a good example. When you heard a big surprise, you said, oh my gosh! And gosh is spelled G-O-S-H.
And many people will say, oh my God, to show that they are very surprised or excited. However, some people try not to say God in that way because of their religious beliefs. So they will say gosh instead.
Gee, when you think about it, there are a lot of small words we say at the beginning of sentences.
Yep, there sure are.
And I think our listeners can understand that yep means the same thing as yes.
That's right. It's just an informal way of saying yes.
Well, Jill, before we go, is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
We forgot to tell them about the two little words we use to end a conversation.
And what are those?
Bye-bye.
That's right. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to the Learning English Podcast. And see you next time.
I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Andrew Smith.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr.